Today on Seculo, in Biden's Oval Office address, is he prepping America for World War III?
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So two things we're watching very closely. Obviously, there's been another vote in the House to try and elect a speaker, and Jim Jordan, this third vote, appears to have failed to get the votes necessary on this vote. So the question is, what happens next? There was discussion yesterday about Patrick McHenry, the pro-Tim, speaker pro-Tim, maybe getting some more power through a congressional act so they could start passing legislation like aid to Israel, budget work, since we're just 3 weeks away from another potential government shutdown. And it would allow Republicans to kind of take their fight behind the scenes and figure out who their speaker is going to be. Because as it stands now, unless votes change, Jordan has failed. Jim Jordan's failed on this third vote. I'd love to see Jim Jordan as speaker. I think it would be awesome, but this is the reality. On top of that, you had President Biden address the nation last night. Can we play some of Biden just for people? Usually in an Oval Office address, it's serious. This time around, it felt like he wanted to do two things. Tie Ukraine to Israel and make sure you didn't just focus on Israel. And then, of course, ask for more money. And what he says is, you know, it's for Israel and Ukraine. So he's trying to get people who have been more questionable about where is this Ukraine money going. So we'll explain that a little for you, but take a listen.
Hamas and Putin represent different threats, but they share this in common. They both want to completely annihilate a neighboring democracy, completely annihilate it. Hamas' stated purpose for existing is the destruction of the state of Israel and the murder of Jewish people.
Okay, so one, he's right on Hamas. I'm not sure that you would compare ever Hamas and Putin. I mean, Putin is the leader of a mega country with nuclear weapons. Thank God Hamas doesn't have those, and it's not a mega country with a mega military. It's a terrorist organization that is actually funded by another country that is yet to have their own nuclear weapons, but certainly could be on that path, Iran. But Logan, you felt like, and I think we all felt like, this was step one in leading us into a potential next major conflict, whether that's a World War III, because if you start saying this war is about Russia, Gaza, Iran, you know, Hamas, Iran, and China, well, that's a world war if you're taking all of them on.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest takeaway for me watching this entire thing was this is the first, what felt to me was this is to prepare you to see this same speech again in a few weeks, a few months, maybe, saying we are now in this global conflict. I hate saying that out loud. I hate feeling that way. It just almost felt like the inevitable. That is how it felt. And there were little kind of moments of sort of threats of that. While talking about Israel, and of course also while talking about Ukraine, there were moments of, if anyone else starts to step in, we will, on our full strength, you know, defend our NATO allies. And to me, that what that equals is, sadly, a world war.
We have not yet seen, at this point, Israel begin a full ground invasion of Gaza. A lot of people thought they were waiting to see about hostages, international hostages being released. That was certainly part of the president's trip. He was not able to get that done. Those meetings about that were canceled in Jordan with the Saudis and the Egyptians and Mahmoud Abbas from the Palestinian Authority. So the next question is, kind of, when does the ground invasion begin? We know the world is turning against Israel, and we see that at the UN, especially. But tying this to Ukraine, we're going to talk about it with Rick Rennell, but I want to take your calls as well. He asked for $100 billion, but you may be surprised how little of that $100 billion is actually going to Israel. We'll take your calls, your questions. Did you watch the speech, and what did you think of the speech? 1-800-684-3110. Did it make you more confident or less confident in U.S. strength abroad? 1-800-684-3110. Be an ACLJ champion. You know, we're fighting on all of these issues. Go to aclj.org/champions to become a recurring donor. We'll be right back with Rick Rennell. Secchio, we are taking your phone calls too at 1-800-684-3110 because we've got these two major things going on. One in our country, which is trying to elect a Speaker of the House. And yesterday there was talk about potentially giving some more power over to the Speaker pro tem so that legislation could start moving, especially on budgeting, support for Israel especially, and knowing that we're just a few weeks away from another potential government shutdown. That kind of got quashed. There was some support for that out there in the afternoon. It got quashed over the evening, and Jim Jordan said, no, we're going back and holding another vote. And they did this morning, and Jim Jordan did not get enough votes to become Speaker. Now, there's an interesting scenario we'll go through later in the show where Jim Jordan could be holding votes over the weekend, and because there could be less members there, there is a path possibly to becoming Speaker. There's also a danger that there could be enough Democrats there where you could have Hakeem Jeffries become Speaker because not enough Republicans are on the floor. So this could be a very interesting scenario on Capitol Hill that our team in D.C. is following, a very close to our government affairs team. But I want to go to Rick Rennell, our senior advisor for foreign policy and national security, on the president's speech last night. I mean, Rick, an Oval Office address is a major moment to the country. This time around, I didn't exactly hear what I'd usually think I'd hear in an Oval Office address, which is something kind of major. This was more of a budget request and a kind of like a, and hey, don't forget, when we're going to support Israel, we still need to support Ukraine.
Yeah, I was struck just by how low the bar is for Joe Biden now. If he can complete a speech that is in the teleprompter in front of him while he's sitting at a desk and he doesn't fall asleep or doesn't slur his words, the media just hail it as an amazing moment, a Churchillian moment. And I think that most Americans who live outside of Washington, D.C. are looking at this and saying, what? This is ridiculous. Why are we putting Israel funding and Ukraine funding? Thank God J.D. Vance was elected in Ohio. He came out very strong right away and said, no, we're not going to put both of these together. You can consider them separately. They're completely in separate parts of the world. They are different criteria. One, we've been funding for more than a year at high levels, and the other is a crisis right now. And so I think that what Biden is trying to do is just use the power of the media that always go along with him and quickly get us to fund everything.
Yeah, I mean, he wants $105 billion. We're going to break that down in a moment, but here is that sound, Rick, you brought up, where our team already had it pulled from Senator Vance. Take a listen, folks.
Why is Joe Biden going on national television and selling people on a Ukrainian escalation when Joe Biden is talking about the terrible tragedy in Israel? Whatever your view, Sean, on Ukraine, it is a separate country and a separate problem. I think what the president did is completely disgraceful. If he wants to sell the American people on $60 billion more to Ukraine, he shouldn't use dead Israeli children to do it. It was disgusting.
Yeah, so Rick, what we know, the breakdown of this $105 billion, of that, only $14 billion would be for Israel. $60 would be to Ukraine, $14 for U.S. border security, $7 for Indo-Pacific region, that would include Taiwan, and $10 million for humanitarian aid. Now, how much of that goes to Palestinians? That kind of, you know, you have to question that too, because they're also defending, by the way, providing aid to Hamas and Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and saying, well, how do you trust that they're going to use that? I mean, we could pull that sound later in the show, and one of his advisors said, well, we have a deal with Hamas. I mean, Rick, the whole thing is this. It's like trying to pull a fast one on the American people who generally do support standing with Israel and want to get that support to Israel. Those are the same people who may question, where has all this money gone in Ukraine? He's trying to unite these issues together and make it kind of like these are all the same enemies, same battle. When instead, like you said, Rick, if Israel really is talking about $14 billion, we don't need an Oval Office address for that. The American people support that.
Yeah, look, I think the American people overwhelmingly support Israel and want to help Israel in every possible way. But giving money to Iran doesn't help Israel. Giving money to Hamas doesn't help Israel. And let's be very clear, Jordan, we have a government in Gaza that is Hamas. The government is a terrorist organization. We have to be very clear-eyed. Joe Biden is acting like we've got some sort of a pinky you know, test with these people. We've got a commitment that Hamas is somehow going to take the money and not spend it on terrorist activities or programs, that it's going to give it to the people. And I put this whole trust that the State Department and the White House has in the same bucket. They trusted Iran. They trust Hamas government. I just find it perplexing. If you want to help Israel, don't be funding Iran and don't be funding Hamas. Help Israel.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like that was, again, Rick, the major part of this speech was, well, he knows about, I think he gets what we both said, was that the American people support Israel. So let me throw Ukraine in there and try to make support for Israel tied directly to Ukraine. And then maybe finally, you know, we'll all just stop debating and questioning, hey, where's all this money going that we're sending to Ukraine with our tax dollars? And we'll just throw it all together. But at the end of the day, using the Oval Office for that kind of address, there was also kind of a lot of talk about World War II, which makes people a bit nervous if he's comparing this moment similar to World War II, because it's like his administration is, listen, they should always be preparing for the worst possible scenario, but you don't want to be, you know, moving fast towards that scenario. You want to try and prevent that scenario. And it seems like they're fine to be on a path towards a World War III when we know our country's not ready for it.
No, this is what's very concerning is now we have a full-blown war in Europe. We have a full-blown war in the Middle East. Joe Biden went all the way over to the Middle East, and diplomacy completely fell apart. He was snubbed. We have Egypt and the Jordanians not meeting with President Biden after he comes all the way over there. It's a total embarrassment. The State Department is completely rudderless. They can't even come up with diplomatic meetings in the middle of a crisis. This is the lowest point for the State Department that I have seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, I wanted to do we have the sound from that advisor, the back and forth? Because I thought this was just so shocking. This is one of the national security advisors. Yeah, Deputy NSA advisor to Biden. Take a listen.
Getting assistance into Gaza is a complicated undertaking. It involves essentially securing an understanding among Hamas fighters who control the checkpoint on the other side of the border, among the government of Israel and among the government of Egypt. And the agreement the president secured will enable these trucks to flow as soon as the roadway can be repaired. But the president was also quite clear that if this assistance goes in, it cannot be misappropriated, cannot be taken by Hamas fighters for their own purposes. And so we're going to be watching that very closely. It has to get to Palestinian civilians who need it.
It has to. But the question is, from what you just said, is the U.S. then essentially in a position where it has to take the word of Hamas that it will not be taken? I mean, what other guarantee can there be?
We believe there is an understanding now among all of the players who control that crossing, the Rafah crossing in Egypt.
Okay, Rick. I mean, literally, they'll be watching Hamas very closely to make sure they're only using those U.S. The goods and services for humanitarian needs, that they won't take them. And again, we feel like we can trust them.
Yeah, dear God, that's all I could think of when I'm listening to that. That's John Finer, who is the deputy national security advisor. It's shameful that he's put in a position to not push back and say to Joe Biden or anyone who tries to tell him that we are going to trust the Hamas government to deliver food aid. This is a waste of U.S. tax dollars. It's an outrage. We should all be very clear with our congressmen that we've got to stop this. This is one of the frustrating things, to go back to your first point, Jordan. The House Republicans have got to get their act together. Yep. I'm way out in California. You know, Washington needs to get its act together. I don't know who's going to be speaker, but find the best person. The enemy of good is perfect. We don't need a perfect one right now. We need a good one. Yep. And find somebody, get it together, and stop some of this crazy funding that Joe Biden is proposing.
I totally agree with you, Rick. And we can't just have these failed votes after failed votes. I'd love for Jim Jordan to be speaker, but he can't get the votes together. I think he's running out of time on those votes. Rick, as always, your insight is great. Rick's part of our team at the ACLJ, and we have team members like this at the ACLJ because of your financial support of the ACLJ, and especially because those of you who are becoming, Logan, ACLJ champions, tell people about it.
That's right. ACLJ champions is what we refer to as our recurring members, people who decide, I am going to be with the ACLJ, not just in a one-time gift, but each and every month on a recurring basis. All you have to do is go to ACLJ.org/champions. That's ACLJ.org/champions. Over 1,400 of you have done that just this month. And that impact is so vast because it helps us plan out what our future could look like in the next year. So again, go to ACLJ.org/champions. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back to Secular. We're taking your calls 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So Rick Rennell was joining us the first half hour. Mike Pompeo, part of our team, going to be joining us in the second half hour of the broadcast to break down the president's comments. An Oval Office address is a big deal. The takeaways that I took away from it were, one, he wants the money. Most of that is for Ukraine. Just about 10% of it, a little bit more, is for Israel, though they don't really get into that detail when you're listening. And he started talking about, well, this is a time like World War II, which is pretty intense considering we haven't been at war at that level since World War II. I mean, there have been massive conflicts. We've been involved in Afghanistan, in Iraq. We've dealt with Islamic terrorism before. We've seen a world in turmoil, but certainly not at the level of casualties that we saw in World War II. I'm not even sure our country is in a mindset to go through a conflict like that with much more lethal weapons available to both sides, both allies and enemies. But I do want to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to be talking about the speaker issue as well, because you really can't divorce those two issues. You know, the Republicans still have no speaker. So on these funding pieces, they can't vote on them. And I think there was about 2 weeks for Israel. We're now a week into that. So by the end of next week, funding and support for Israel is over. Like, if there's no speaker by the end of next week, is it by the end of this week or next week? I'm trying to think. I think it's next week.
It's a week. Full week.
We got one more week. And then we'd have to have new appropriations to support our ally Israel. That's not talking about the more controversial things like Ukraine. But I want to go to Don's call in California. Called in yesterday late in the show. Weren't able to get to him. Hey, Don, welcome to Seculo. You're on the air.
Bless you, fellows. Bless the work you do. You know, I support the ACLJ. You know, I'm an old school Reagan Goldwater conservative. I agree with you on like 99% of everything. And that's why, to me, it's so galling. Your guys' particular position on Ukraine seems so hostile to Ukraine, where like Mike Pompeo, your expert, is so strong on Ukraine, wanting to get them the weapons they need in a timely manner. He wants victory for Ukraine, a defeat for Putin. And you guys seem, I don't know, you're throwing a lot of spaghetti against the wall, if I can say.
Where we've been is this, Don, is I don't want the U.S. fighting Ukraine's war. So far, we haven't sent U.S. troops there. That's good. But I also don't think we need to be endlessly funding a war without a plan to end it. Now, if Mike Pompeo was the Secretary of Defense, he'd have a plan to end it, a plan to win. Have you heard, Don, yet a plan from Joe Biden on how this comes to an end?
Not from Biden. That's my criticism of Biden.
Well, he's the president, so that's why I'm criticizing him. Like, I don't want to support a war that doesn't have an end because it's not good for Ukrainians. This scares me, Don, is that we're just funding the U.S. Defense contractors, and we want a destroyed Ukraine to one day then do a new Marshall Plan that all of our contractors love to go in and companies love to go in and get bids on to rebuild infrastructure in a country like they're doing right now in Iraq. So, I mean, that's where my issue is, Don. It's not with fighting back Russian aggression in Ukraine. It's why do we not have an end game? Why can't they clearly tell me this is the goal? This is how we define victory. Because when you can't define victory, Don, you lose. You ultimately become the loser because you're not writing the history. So when you get into these conflicts, like Israel's made it clear, they want to make Hamas inoperable. That's their goal. They have not said whether they're going to take over the Gaza Strip forever or for a couple of weeks. Yeah. But their big goal is Hamas as a terror group needs to be inoperable. That's a goal you can understand. What's the goal in Ukraine? Is it to push them back to Crimea? Is it to ultimately invade Russia? Is it to take over Russia? Is it to get Putin thrown out? It's unclear. And it changes. It seems like it changes day to day. And the amount of money that Biden goes to the American people last night, Don, he says he wants $100 billion. Most of the speech is about Israel. And only $14 billion of that goes to Israel. The rest goes to Ukraine. That makes me upset.
Yeah, when you actually see the percentage breakdown, it makes you go, okay, this is a bit of a bait and switch here. This is to combine two things. And look, I think Don brought up a point. You see, you sound hostile to Ukraine. Go listen to our early shows. Early shows are very supportive of Ukraine. What we've seen now is that we're a year and a half plus into this thing.
So much taxpayer money.
And this is where I've said I feel like that our government never listens to where the people are right now. They listen to where they were initially. Initially, we were all in favor of being supportive of Ukraine. And we all are still. Yes, they're being invaded. We're all still supportive of Ukraine. What we're not supportive of is endless funding and endless money and potential of upping this war to where things get out of control.
And isn't it a stalemate right now that you can end it? I mean, we don't see much of it on TV right now because most of the news is on what's happening in Israel and Gaza and protests going on around the world. You're not hearing as much out of Ukraine. I'm sure the conflict is still raging.
Yeah.
But is it raging to a point where you could possibly start seeing light at the end of the tunnel?
But remember, we're also only 27 more days until another government shutdown, potentially. Right. You know, the extension, 45-day extension, is almost halfway over at this point. So
we
this
got
is
no Speaker of the House.
That's what I'm saying. This is where things are starting to feel like a failed state, you know, at some point.
Yes, I agree. You know, Rick is not someone who would usually come on and say, we don't need the perfect speaker. We just need somebody who's good who could get in there. But that's the point we're at now. I would love for Jim Jordan to be Speaker of the House. I endorsed him immediately when Kevin McCarthy announced that he was not going to run again.
Yeah.
But we can't, and they do need to do that, Logan. Yeah. They need to go behind closed doors, make it a done deal, and stop making embarrassing fellow Republicans. Because if you're a Republican in the House and you're embarrassing your fellow Republicans every time you do these failed votes, guess what you're going to lose? Your slim majority. What does that mean? You lose the committee chairs. You lose your power. Use your ability to prevent bad legislation from going to a liberal president's desk. Is that what we really want? So let's figure out who it's going to be. Let's go behind closed doors and let's get it done. And if you can't, give that power over to Patrick McHenry and let's make sure we can keep the government funded so we don't look like a failed party. You were talking about failed state.
Yeah.
Don't make the Republican Party look like a failed party. We'll continue to take your phone calls. Second half hour of the broadcast, 1-800-684-3110. Talking about both, of course, the situation in Israel, President Biden's speech last night to the nation. Jim Jordan, just to make clear, if you're just joining us, third vote on his speakership over multiple days this week has failed. It's Friday. So what happens over the weekend? What deals get made? We're not sure yet. We're not even, there's a possibility. Here's one possibility over the weekend. A number of members could potentially be absent this weekend. They go home. They go back to their districts. So there is a chance that because if you got the right mix of members and Jordan opponents that would be absent, he could possibly win. However, if another blend of members are absent, it could be possible that Republicans, if they're not careful, could elect House Minority Leader, the Democrat, Hakeem Jeffries, as Speaker. So we are in a, what I would call, Logan, danger zone this weekend.
Yeah, potentially getting,
because it depends on how many of your members you can convince to stick it out in Washington, D.C. this weekend.
That's right. Look, and right now we're about to head into our second half hour of Seculo. If you don't get us on your local, if you listen on radio, and a lot of you do, some stations only pick up the first half hour. Find us right now. And look, you get to see us, which is a better experience, on ACLJ.org, on Rumble, our premier platform. Rumble, check us out. Look at the ACLJ channel. We're broadcasting live there right now. YouTube, Facebook, all our social media outlets. We are broadcasting live for the next half hour, as well as on satellite radio and terrestrial radio across the country. If you don't get us for some reason in your area or you want a different experience, find us right now at ACLJ.org. It's probably the easiest. Just go there, ACLJ.org. Also, right now, we are asking you to join with us and become ACLJ champions. That is a recurring donor who wants to stand with us, stand with Israel, be a champion of life, liberty, and freedom. So it's easy. Just go to aclj.org/champions, and to the over 1,500 that have done it already, thank you.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome back to Seculo. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. We've been talking about President Biden's Oval Office address. We had Rick Grenell on. Mike Pompeo is going to be joining us in the next segment of the broadcast to break more of that down for you, too, and get his reaction to that speech. We also are following closely what's happening on Capitol Hill, where we have seen yet again Jim Jordan failed to get the votes necessary to become speaker. And we started looking at scenarios over the weekend that could benefit Jim Jordan if he's still in it, in the race for speaker, which, because some people will go home, but also how it could be dangerous for Republicans if too many Republicans go home and enough Democrats stay. You could have the minority leader right now, Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrat from New York, get enough votes in the House chamber to become majority leader. I mean, these are actual potential outcomes. This is why you start getting into a danger zone when you don't get this done in a period of time. And I think when it takes more than a week, you do start getting into kind of danger zones where you could be giving up your congressional majority because you simply can't agree on who your speaker should be for a month or a month and a half. And we got major issues facing the world. Do you think the American people like that when we've got a potential government shutdown in 3 weeks? We have war in Israel. We have war in Europe. We see terror attacks on the rise. We've seen it in Europe. We've gotten the warnings about them in the United States from Homeland Security, about Islamic terrorism again here in the United States. And we don't have a Speaker of the House when Republicans, who fought so hard to get that majority, slim majority, and they asked you to vote, they asked you to donate, you did, you got them the slim majority, and now they can't elect a Speaker. I mean, this puts us in a very tough situation. Let's go to Mary Ellen's call on line one from Illinois. Hi, Mary Ellen.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Yeah, Jordan and Logan. Two quick points. When I heard that talk yesterday from Biden, I thought, oh, I don't like the idea of this humanitarian aid because we know where that's going. But as I listened to you and Rick earlier today, what occurs to me is each one of these items should be voted separately. And I do not like all these bills that have all these parts, and then they even will tack on other things that we don't even want. So that's my point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of generic stuff in here, too. I mean, when they break down the $105 billion, $14 billion for Israel, so they get a pretty small amount. The next smallest amount, $14 billion for U.S. border security. So, again, I'd like a little more there, but it's kind of nice that we get something. $60 billion for Ukraine, but they don't tell us what for Ukraine. Like, we know what Israel's going for. They need military equipment, Iron Dome equipment. I mean, they talk about it. They also talk about what border security would mean. $7 billion for Indo-Pacific region, including Taiwan. So that's to push back against the Chinese. I can get that. And then $10 billion for humanitarian aid. That's going to the Palestinians, I'm guessing. Yeah. And remember, they then went on TV and we played that crazy bite from the deputy national security advisor saying, no, we can trust Hamas here. I mean, this is again, they're going to end up, they want us to give $10 billion over to the Palestinians.
Yeah.
And let them distribute it the way they want.
Well, and you said it's this idea of we can trust these people because this is how we've worked out some special deals. And
yeah, well, it's of your hostages.
Now, there was that, like, in that speech, there was that too, which is, hey, if we find out that a dollar of this isn't going to the right people, then we're taking action. It's like, again, another thing.
What are you going to do?
Right.
War?
That's what it feels like. And you're saying,
you didn't get the hostages out.
You're saying that $100 million, if it gets misappropriated by Hamas, which, by the way, highly likely, then it's just giving you an excuse for war. I don't love that kind of conversation happening.
It's almost like they're setting it up for an excuse for war. Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly. All right, we come back. Mike Pompeo will be joining us, senior advisor, senior counsel with the ACLJ. We'll take your questions, your comments, too, because we'll have a full segment after that to get your analysis. 1-800-684-3110 to join us on the air. That's 1-800-684-3110. Stick with us through that segment with Secretary Pompeo joining us live, and then we will get to your phone calls as well. We want you to become an ACLJ champion. Logan, we've been fighting for Israel. Great successes so far in Europe, at the UN, at the Council of Europe, and at the EU, and that work continues.
Yeah, that's right. And we also have work going on, the 14th Amendment issues, that's happening right now. You got an email today from the ACLJ. It was about that. So while chaos is stopping around the world, you can be an ACLJ champion right now.
Secular. We are joined by our senior counsel for global affairs, Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, former CIA director. And Secretary Pompeo, there was a lot to unpack in the president's Oval Office address last night. You know, when the president, they announced one of these after a trip overseas, you kind of expect to hear something big. It did seem like most of the speech last night, what it ultimately got to was asking for more funding from Congress and the American people for two wars that started while President Biden has been president, and kind of conflating Israel and Ukraine together without the breakdown. We have seen the breakdown now, but I just want generally your thoughts about the president's delivery last night and his and kind of his explanation to the American people. I was expecting something maybe a little bit more descriptive, maybe a little bit more tough on the people that are still held hostage, they're Americans by Hamas, and he kind of mentioned that, but didn't spend a lot of time on it. What's your reaction?
Jordan, my reaction was very similar to the one that you just described. These are important moments. When presidents go to the resolute desk, presidents should be resolute in making the case to the American people about why we're asking them to do something that is very difficult. A good, important, decent, the right thing for America to do, but hard things. And I didn't hear that. I didn't hear it because, frankly, it is difficult for the Biden administration to do anything other than throw money at these problems because they don't want to do the grinding, difficult work of using the full scale of American power to deter our adversaries. And so the speech was kind of like a request for taxpayer money for foreign aid to a handful of places. I support the assistance to the Ukrainian Defense Forces. We need to give Israel every single thing that it needs to do every single thing that it needs. But when the president refuses to acknowledge that Iran killed 30 Americans and that it is, in fact, Iran that is continuing to hold Americans hostage, in spite of the fact we gave them $6 billion in ransom to get all our hostages out just weeks ago, when you're not honest about the fact that two wars have started on your watch, and explaining like why you failed to prevent those from happening, it is very difficult to inspire the American people to do the necessary on behalf of our country.
Yeah, I mean, one very uniting issue, putting aside the protesters, who I still think are very much the minority, especially in America, maybe not so much in Europe, but in America, these protests that we see on college campuses, even on Capitol Hill, that most Americans, Republican, Democrat, who independent, do support Israel, do understand the idea of why we support Israel in that region of the world and why they're a security partner for Israel. And so it's not a hard sell when you see what happened to Israel to get support for Israel. What's been a harder sell is on Ukraine is not so much why we are helping the Ukrainians, it's how do we get to an end game. You know, Israel already said what they ultimately want to accomplish with inside the Gaza Strip. They want to eliminate Hamas's capability of being a terror organization. They laid it out very clearly. And sometimes with Ukraine, we don't get a full layout of where do you want to see this come to an end? And then we see the cost breakdown. And part of this cost breakdown, Secretary Pompeo, is $100 million in aid to Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And this is how President Biden's deputy national security advisor, when he was asked about, well, Hamas, have you made some deal with Hamas on this money? And they're trusting Hamas again. It's like trust. You were just talking about the Iranians. Here it is. I mean, live on TV, this is their answer.
Getting assistance into Gaza is a complicated undertaking. It involves essentially securing an understanding among Hamas fighters who control the checkpoint on the other side of the border, among the government of Israel and among the government of Egypt. And the agreement the president secured will enable these trucks to flow as soon as the roadway can be repaired. But the president was also quite clear that if this assistance goes in, it cannot be misappropriated, cannot be taken by Hamas fighters for their own purposes. And so we're going to be watching that very closely. closely. It has to get to Palestinian civilians who need it.
It has to. But the question is, from what you just said, is the U.S. then essentially in a position where it has to take the word of Hamas that it will not be taken? I mean, what other guarantee can there be?
We believe there is an understanding now among all of the players who control that crossing, the Rafah crossing in Egypt.
Okay, Secretary Pompeo, they're not even trying to hide it from us. It's $100 million in aid to Hamas-controlled Gaza Strip. They're going to trust that, I guess, we can watch that money, and if they don't spend it the right way, what are we going to invade? I mean, what are the other options? We've got the Egyptians. They don't seem like they're going to be willing to invade either. $100 million in resources to Hamas while they're about to be invaded by Israel props up Hamas pretty well.
It's Jordan, as I listen to you roll it out, lay it out. And I think for everybody watching who support the ACLJ in important ways, it's just ludicrous. I was going to use naive, but this is past naive. This is dangerous. This money will go to the very human beings that took older women hostage, that slit the throats of babies, that decimated communities, that blew up buildings inside the Negev Desert just now, 14 days ago. That's who's going to get this money. They'll use it for diesel fuel to power their generators that will continue to fire, be the electricity that helps support the firing of rockets into Israel. It's $100 million to support terror. It's illegal, in my view, to do that. They are a designated U.S. terrorist, but President Biden has chosen to do that. It's his. Jordan, here's the thing. It's the model they've used, right? $6 billion for the regime to get back hostages. Don't enforce the sanctions so that the Iranian regime will view you as friendly and maybe slow down the enrichment of their nuclear program. These things are foolish. The Islamic Republic of Iran is the world's largest state sponsor of terror. They not only want to wipe the Jews out of Israel and off the planet, they want to destroy our country too. To give them $100 million in American money during armed conflict is just so dangerous for the American people, and certainly for those IDF soldiers that are going to go into Gaza and do the hard work of protecting Israel.
Yeah, I know that it's difficult when you've got hostages. I know that there's different scenarios, there's different options and diplomatically handled. Sometimes you do it publicly. Sometimes it's very behind the scenes. Sometimes you make threats. Sometimes you don't. But President Biden very briefly mentioned the American hostages held by Hamas. He didn't make it a big part of the speech last night, and he didn't make a threat to go along with the speech, like if they are not released at a certain time, this or that. Some of this is because we think that was kind of worked out before his trip, and then when those other meetings fell apart with other leaders in the Middle East, that part fell apart, the release of American hostages. But again, that situation, I know it complicates matters. I know it makes it more difficult. It makes it more difficult for Israel, and it makes it more difficult for the United States. But last night, he had an opportunity to kind of lay out to the American people how important those Americans are, and at least some idea of what we might be doing. Do you have to give away everything to get them home?
Well, I do want to give them all the space to get these Americans home. I am praying for those families. I'm praying for the Israeli families that have loved ones held hostage as well. And we should give them all the space. But Jordan, giving them space isn't about being naive or not speaking the truth, which is that President Biden simply has refused to acknowledge that this is Iran that has now reloaded its inventory of American hostages, exactly as you and I talked about the fact that they would do. And when I hear people say, gosh, they're using these hostages as human shields, it's worse than that, right? They're using these hostages to try and convince the world that they are in the moral right. That is, when these hostages die, they're going to say, gosh, that was because of something the Israelis did or something that the Americans did, when in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. They are so indecent, so barbaric, that the demands of that speech last night would have been to lay that out with absolute moral clarity. Our commitment to permitting Prime Minister Netanyahu all the time, all the space that he and his national security team need to keep Israel safe. And had they combined that, had they done those two things, moral clarity and the space for Israel to do that hard work, we should have combined it then with a very clear call to the Islamic Republic of Iran saying, we will hold you accountable, and here are the lines which you cannot cross. Instead, the president just made some statement about he's already held Iran accountable. And I promise you, Prime Minister or the President Raisi and the Ayatollah don't think they've had any accountability for the 1,300 murders that were committed 14 days ago.
Secretary Pompeo, you're also CIA director. And this final question, we've only got about a minute here, but I wanted to ask you. The State Department did issue a worldwide caution to Americans traveling abroad yesterday. I know many of us were thinking, you know, this would be post-COVID, the kind of year of where we'd start international travel, even traveling with our kids overseas again. What do you think the significance of this type of caution is from the State Department? You think they're worried again about Islamic terror hitting the Western world?
I think that's exactly what it is. By the way, I think that's reasonable for them to have done. They probably know more than I do about the various risks that are out there. But the State Department's usually pretty careful about doing global advisories like this. There must be something that they have seen. I would just tell anybody listening, thinking about traveling the world, do the right thing. Know who you're meeting with. I still think one can travel to most places in the world and be relatively safe. I'm mindful that, you know, traveling to inner city Chicago is not always the safest thing to do either, because we have district attorneys who have not done the domestic work here to put criminals in jail. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that the Biden administration will do the work of deterrence that will permit Americans to travel around the world safely.
Absolutely. Thank you, Secretary Pompeo, for your insight, folks. We'll be right back on Seculo, taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. All right, welcome back to Seculo. So we've had Rick Rudell, got Mike Pompeo. We want to hear from more of you folks, though, talking about the president's address last night, what's going on in Israel, and what he announced, what he would like from you, the American people, which is more money. $14 billion for Israel. I don't think anybody would have an issue with that. $60 billion more for Ukraine. It's so much easier to understand what Israel needs. It's tougher because, and I think it's because the Israelis have come out and said, this is our goal. Our goal is to eliminate Hamas's ability to carry out attacks on Israelis. I mean, it's a very definable goal, and you realize how that's done. It's by destroying Hamas's military and terror apparatuses and their weapons caches and the tunnels they use. It's not about killing every Palestinian or occupying forever the Gaza Strip. It might be for some time period, might be for a short time period, might be for a longer period, but they lay out what the end goal is. And that's the tough part with Ukraine, when he throws in, by the way, this should be for Israel and Ukraine, and you realize this is mostly for Ukraine, $60 billion, and we don't have an end game on that. And then there's $100 billion in there for the Gazans, who are controlled by Hamas. And the money will have to be distributed by Hamas. And you've got Biden advisors to this day, after all those atrocities carried out by Hamas, who still trust that Hamas would do the right thing with this money, when we now know that they fired the rocket that killed the people in the hospital parking lot.
Right. Yeah, now it's the hospital. Let's go ahead and take some phone calls. A lot of you have been on hold for a long time. Let's go first to Sylvia, because you've just been on hold the longest. Sylvia in Texas, you're on the air.
Thank you. I've got several questions. The things that Biden is saying... continues to say, and the money he continues to think is just going to flow out of the, I don't know what. Anyway, had the Republicans, I mean, I think the vote that we need right now to have a Speaker of the House is really important. And have the Republicans forgotten who voted for them and why? We're not voting, you know, we don't vote in the way that others do for the other party. And I'd just like to see them stand up strong as Republicans to vote the way they know the American people want them to vote. And yes, you may not get to go home with your family as often as you want to, but that's part of the job, and it's an important job.
You know what? If they had a speaker, they'd get to go home because they'd get a better schedule. Because the speaker would put together the schedule on when they were going to have votes, and the committee hearings would begin again, and budget hearings would begin again, and they'd actually be able to address, without laughing at them because they can't even put a piece of legislation forward, what President Biden discussed last night and that $100 billion, which right now they couldn't even put legislation through to get $14 billion to Israel because they don't have a speaker. And Logan, I do think it's not the majority of Republicans. The majority of Republicans, I think, 80% or 90%, is it about 90%, Will, or more, are voting for Jim Jordan.
Right.
It is the 10% or less in the House who are
keeping it from going over
keeping
the edge.
Us from getting a speaker.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Let's go ahead. I think people feel that and way now, too. You're
exactly right. It's embarrassing. It hurts the Republican Party, and it makes us look like we're a party that can't govern.
Absolutely. Let's go to Joanne, who is calling. Joanne in Ohio on line 4. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I have 2 points to make about what Biden said last night. First of all, right after this happened, the weekend after all this happened in Israel, I heard an Israeli official say, we don't want any money from the United States. All we want is them to rearmament us when we need it. We will pay for it. We just want to be able to do what we have to do. Now, all of a sudden, Biden's coming up with $14 billion that Israel hasn't asked for, which is spending money we don't have. And then this thing with the border, what is it, $7 billion? Trump asked for $2 billion, and they fought him for 3 years.
I know. I'd say with Israel will say, you know, we will ultimately pay for these weapons. But some of that, you know, you get the weapons before the payment's made. I mean, you're in a time of war. Specifically when it comes to the Iron Dome, which was a joint project between the U.S. DOD and the Israeli Ministry of Defense. We actually work on the Iron Dome together, Israel and the United States. So part of our job with the Iron Dome is continuing to make it better. And by making it better, it's using new weapon systems and missiles to shoot those other missiles out of the sky. What they're always concerned about is having enough missiles ready so that they can replenish the systems, especially if Hezbollah gets involved and they've got more sophisticated weaponry. They've got about 100,000 GPS locked in missiles pointed at Israel. So not nearly as crude as the ones that are shot out right. by Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. You could quickly go through your kind of cache of devices and weapons you need to shoot those out of the sky. So the Iron Dome is kind of a joint project. And that's where I think a lot of those funds, that $14 billion, and why it's not $60 billion like Ukraine, because we're not funding their entire military. It's because we have joint military projects with Israel. That's how close of an ally they are. We share top technology. We actually are letting them, we've been letting them test the Iron Dome system so that ultimately we can deploy it on the battlefield to protect U.S. troops from incoming.
All right, let's quickly go ahead and go to Mario in Virginia. You're on the air. Hey, keep it quick.
Hey. I had 2 questions. One, who is managing the resources we left behind in Afghanistan? And how much access can anyone, because if we know the Taliban has done, you know, got into places that they shouldn't have, we need to be more vigilant in checking out, and protecting the resources that we left behind in Afghanistan. And secondly, as far as the speaker is concerned, I heard something about Trump may be wanting to go that way.
Well, I mean, listen, you don't have to be a member of Congress to become speaker. I don't think Donald Trump's going to go through rounds and rounds of votes. I think if they came to him and said, we've got a full majority of votes for you, will you become speaker for a month? Would he consider it? Probably. I don't know if he'd take it or not, but he'd consider it. He might say, you know what, for the good of the American people, we need to get a speaker of the House in so we can start getting aid to Israel. And make sure this war doesn't escalate to a conflict where the U.S. has to be involved. But, again, I think that's a long shot, too. On your first point, who controls the weapons that were left behind? The government of Afghanistan. Who is the government of Afghanistan? The Taliban. Who would they love to sell those weapons to? Their friends in Hamas, if they need some cash.
All right, let's quickly go to Dean in Oklahoma. Dean, you're on the air. Bill, sorry, we're not going to be able to get to you today. Dean, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Hey, I have compassion for Palestine. I mean, I understand wanting to help them because they're in a mess. But if you give aid to them, I would believe that Hamas is not going to go hungry. And my question would be is how many Israelites will lose their lives because of this? I mean, would it not make them in better shape that they would actually be able to fight better and cost more Israelis their lives? And I think
you prop up a terrorist group that you're going to, that you know your ally is going to go war with $100 million, it's going to make it tougher to beat them. Doesn't mean you won't beat them, but they will have more resources. Like you said, their fighters aren't going to go hungry. They're going to have bullets. They're going to have the missiles they need. They're going to have the weapons they need. They're going to have the tunnels they need and the equipment they need. This is not going to be likely a short-term conflict. When we get to that point where Israel goes in a mass scale, I'm not talking about special forces, but in a mass scale, this could be a war that lasts months.
Yeah, if not more.
If not longer.
Yeah, especially because of who all gets involved. I mean,
Israel occupied the Gaza Strip for years.
And that's why we need your support, too, also for our office in Jerusalem and our offices around the world. Become ACLJ champions today. That means becoming a recurring donor. All you have to do is go to ACLJ.org/champions to stand with Israel, life, liberty, and freedom. ACLJ.org/champions. Talk to you next week.